what's been bothering me lately, just looking at different tweets and LinkedIn messages, is that I think since GA4 rolled out, people are now shying away from just measuring the effectiveness of any channel. If anyone's been watching our videos or reading our content over the last 5 years, this is what's frustrated us with almost every other marketer that does content, is they kind of have this belief. It's like, if we just grow traffic, some portion of those people will convert, and there's no difference in any of the content that you produce.
We literally have created the current system at Grow and Convert and what we do based on not doing that.
And our whole pain point SEO methodology was based on us proving ourselves wrong by looking at data and showing that not every article you produce has the same effectiveness in terms of driving results for the business. And there are certain articles that drive way more conversions, that have way more of an impact. If you just had this mindset that all pieces of content that you produce are equal, you're just not going to drive the same results.
Okay, today, Benji, we're talking about my favorite topic of all time, attribution. We've done several posts and videos over the years on attribution because Google keeps making it more and more challenging, and we're going to talk about that today. Specifically, our methods. We're going to talk about a few things. One, some recent online chatter that Benji has run into about whether or not it's even useful to do attribution. Then we're going to talk about our methods of attribution. And by the way, if anyone has read or heard anything we've ever said, you know where we stand on whether it's useful to do attribution. Then we're going to talk about our method and how it was based on some features in Universal Analytics, UA, that have become exponentially harder in GA4. And we're going to sort of, debut or kind of show a very recent update of a method we've used to work around GA4's limitations, specifically by exporting the raw data from your GA4 account into a SQL database and querying it ourselves. We have Amethyst on here from our team, who is our resident Grow and Convert paid ads and analytics specialist. And she will be explaining how a lot of the details of this Google BigQuery SQL database exporting your GA4 data work. So a warning to anyone who's listening to this in audio only in the podcast form, the vast majority of our episodes are totally fine. It's mostly me and Benji just talking. And so the podcast episode lets you avoid having to look at our faces the entire time, which is a plus. But this one, we will be doing screen share to show some of this. So we have the exact same episodes on our YouTube channel, so you can go see the screen share there. But we should be able to explain it enough for you to kind of get the gist of it if you're listening while walking or driving or whatever. Let's start with the beginning. Is it useful to attribute leads, let's say conversions, whatever, sales, to individual pieces of marketing content, individual URLs? Because Benji, you're telling me that you've been hearing increasingly online people sort of saying, oh, this is so hard, or GA4 is making it so hard, so let's just not do that.
Yeah. So it's funny that we're doing this episode today, because we had already planned this out and I came across a LinkedIn message this morning, which I'll get to in a second. But I think generally what's been bothering me lately, just looking at different tweets and LinkedIn messages, is that I think since GA4 rolled out, people are now shying away from just measuring the effectiveness of any channel.
Why?
Because it's become hard. And I think people just generally shy away from things that are difficult. And instead of trying to solve the problem, they instead just resort to, let's just come up with another solution. And so I made this joke this morning on Twitter that says GA4 is difficult, so we're switching our attribution model to guessing what's working, and signed by marketers in 2024. but I think generally, if I just think about the last 10 years of marketing, we went from maybe 10 to 15 years of marketing. I think if you look at 20 2010 to 2015, we went from measure everything. And so there was a very big focus on attributing success down to every channel, ad group, piece of content, to now fast forward to the last few years. I think there's a popular narrative going around that that's not really helpful anymore. And that, like, it's really difficult to measure what's working, so you just shouldn't measure anything. That's just like the general sentiment right now. And I just don't believe that. It's like, there's no perfect measure. Like, you're never going to be able to attribute 100% of customers to any singular marketing activity. It's just not possible with the technology that's in place. But that doesn't mean that it's not useful to measure the effectiveness, because you can see directionally things are working and make budgetary decisions, resource allocation decisions based on what's working, instead of just having kind of like a haphazard view of the channel and just saying, generally this channel is working, so we're going to invest more in it. Okay, well, what's working about it? You may be investing in the things in the channel that are not working, and then all that wasted spend or additional resources you're allocated could be wasted and not have effectiveness. So here is that, going back to the LinkedIn post this morning. It says, measuring the ROI of an individual piece of content is not only a huge waste of time, it's flat out not accurate. Here's what to do instead. When it comes to ROI, focus on measuring the ROI of the channel instead of the individual piece of content. You don't attribute the ROI of your results at the gym to that one set of bicep curls that you did 3 months ago. It makes no sense. But that's effectively what B2B marketers are trying to do with content. Instead, recognize that the impact is based on the accumulation of consistent, high-quality activities executed over a sustained period of time. It's easy to see that it's more appropriate to attribute ROI of your bicep results to all the set of the bicep curls you've done in life instead of a single set. You can do this the same when measuring the success of content. Measure the ROI based on the channel or activity. And I just flat out completely disagree with almost everything written in this post, because essentially you're saying there's no difference in conversion rate or effectiveness of one piece of content to the next. It's the accumulation of every single piece of content that you've produced. And I think if anyone's been watching our videos or reading our content over the last 5 years, this is what's frustrated us with almost every other marketer that does content, is they kind of have this belief. It's like, if we just grow traffic, some portion of those people will convert, and there's no difference in any of the content that you produce.
We literally have created the current system at Grow and Convert and what we do based on not doing that.
And to be fair, we kind of had a similar belief coming into our agency, where we thought, okay, if we just produce stories and get traffic, I mean, obviously there's more nuance to it, but if we produce stories that are interesting to the right audience, get them in front of the right people, that it'll lead to conversions. And our whole pain point SEO methodology was based on us proving ourselves wrong by looking at data and showing that not every article you produce has the same effectiveness in terms of driving results for the business. And there are certain articles that drive way more conversions, that have way more of an impact. And if you were just to focus on, if you just had this mindset that all pieces of content that you produce are equal, you're just not going to drive the same results. If you had the data that showed that there's certain pieces of content that you can produce that convert like 5 to 10x to 100x higher than other pieces.
Yeah. I mean, yes, you said what I was saying, but I was saying it unclearly. You're right. What I meant with, yeah, the current version of Grow and Convert, aka Pain Point SEO, came from us sitting down and being like, so which of these pieces is converting? And realized that it was like not even 80-20 rule. It was like a, what, like a 99-1 rule, it felt like. I don't know the exact number, but like a small number were driving it. So I have Pain Point SEO open because I always do, because that's all we ever show any client or lead, because we need to like teach people this over and over again. And so here we are. It almost feels like embarrassing that we have to go over these basics of Pain Point SEO again, because anyone who's been reading Grow and Convert would be like, yes, I know. But if that's someone's LinkedIn message, we'll just show it again. So this dude, whoever that is, first of all, I even disagree with his gym take, because for people like me that only do one or two bicep curls in a year, I can attribute 100% of my bicep growth to just those one or two curls. Okay. So first of all, excuse you. Second, in terms of content, this is Pain Point SEO. If you are listening to this or watching the channel and you have not read this, you need to read it, right? Just Google Pain Point SEO. Side note, we were not ranked in the featured snippet for a year one time many years ago, and it really upset us. But now we are at the top if you Google Pain Point SEO, because and we literally
with invented the bicep curl thing. I have biceps and I don't even go to the gym. So how do you say that?
You should just reply to his LinkedIn message with that total.
Take a look at my biceps.
Yeah. Excuse me, dude. Then how would I get this? I don't even do any curls. And so this screenshot is like what, 1, 2, 3 sentences in to this foundational piece.
But I still think even the intro to this post, it's exactly like proving this point. If you actually, this is the value of measuring things on an article by article basis, is that people have this misconception that all of their blog is driving traffic and leads. And when you actually look in an analytics account, you realize that a majority of the conversions and traffic come from certain posts, and that a majority of your content isn't doing anything. So the flip side to his argument is, wouldn't you want to know what pieces of content are driving results so that you could do more of those?
Yeah, I have more like weight loss analogies, but I'll save everyone from it. But you make a good point. Let's read these three sentences for people that are not watching this, the YouTube. This is the beginning of the post, and then I'll explain the screenshot, because the screenshot just single-handedly dismantles that entire argument. And like, we're not exaggerating, Benji and I, when we say basically the entire system of Pain Point SEO, this focus on bottom of funnel content, which we have noticed like a lot of people espouse now, came from this realization. Okay. The article: if you were to look inside your Google Analytics right now, chances are that a majority of the traffic on your blog posts come from 2 to 5 blog posts. This is so funny. You're so right, Benji, that this like literally the first sentence, this was written in 2018.
Yeah. This is what frustrates me, is like people are still pushing the same narrative that like measuring content doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. And then we say, to confirm this, you can set up events in GA. We're going to talk the rest of the video kind of about that. And then the last thing says is, what's interesting though, is that often the posts with the highest volume of traffic don't have the highest volume of conversions, which is the misconception that you're saying. If you adopt that guy's mentality, you say content in general, all of the blog is contributing a certain amount, and you don't realize what's actually happening underneath. So this screenshot, I'll explain as best as I can to listeners only, is an analytics screenshot showing each row has a unique landing page. We've blurred it out to save the client's privacy. It has like a traffic measure, users, in the first column, and many columns to the right. It has a conversion metric, new user signups. This is a SaaS client. And the key numbers are, there are 3 posts that are boxed that we argue in the article are Pain Point SEO or bottom of funnel. And they have, in this date range, collected 40, 30, and 50 conversions roughly each. First is 40, then 30, then 50. The other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 articles have, now listen carefully, converted this many times: 5, 3, 0, 8, 0, 0, 3. So if you were to do what that guy is saying and add this up, 40 plus 30 is 70, plus 50 is 120, and then what, like 8, 3, and 5, maybe add another 20, is 140 new user signups. You would rightfully say our blog content, and this isn't all of it, but let's just, you know, pretend this is all of it, has produced 140 signups. It's working. You're right. But if you didn't measure it on an article by article basis, you would lose out on the critical realization or fact that 120 out of the 140 is being driven by 3 articles. This screenshot created Pain Point SEO. It created our bottom of funnel method,
because it made us ask the very obvious question that any human, any marketer with any critical thinking would ask when they see this analytics, say, oh my God, how do we do more of the 40, 30, and 50? Because the 308003 articles here, they're not doing anything or barely anything. And something I tell, we show this screenshot to almost every lead when we have a sales conversation. And something that I always say is, this is not one of those things you hear in marketing, like we did this and it provided a 20% lift. It's not a 50% lift. It's not a 100% lift. 100% lift on 3 is 6. This bottom article got 50 conversions, not 6. It's like on versus off, basically. It's dramatic. 10x, more than 10x. 10x of 3 is 30. And so this is what you miss out on. This is why it's important to measure at a single level. Side note, because we have Amethyst on this call and what a huge part of her day job is paid ads, just this is an aside, we've noticed the same thing on paid ads. Is people be like, just talk about it as like an ad channel. Google Ads is doing this. And when we've gotten into the accounts, you realize you're actually wasting a bunch of your spend on random nonsense, broad match keywords that are just showing ads for ultimately for search terms that make no sense. And if you don't come in, you don't go into the details and look at it, you just don't even realize it, that you're wasting thousands of dollars a month on this. And so you can just increase your ROAS instantly by just filtering down to the things that are actually working. This is the SEO and content equivalent of it. So it's just absolutely not true. Like, no matter how much of this random post in the middle here that got zero conversions, no matter how many of these you produce, it's just not doing anything. You don't need to spend time doing this.
Yeah. I also think how insane this argument would be if it was applied to paid search. Like, imagine a marketer saying, you know what? We're actually not going to look at a keyword by keyword or ad group by ad group basis on what's converting. We're just going to say paid ads is working and like not like remove spend from the keywords that are not converting, not optimize the account at all. Like, I feel like people only make this argument when it comes to content. And it's just like mind blowing. Like, you would never say this with paid ad because every dollar you spend, you need to get a return on. And people have this misconception about content that it doesn't work the same way. Like, if you're spending money and resources on producing a piece of content, don't you want some sort of return on it? I mean, it might not have 100% hit rate in terms of driving a conversion, but wouldn't you want to give your best guess as to what's going to drive revenue for the company instead of just this kind of shotgun approach of let's produce 100 different articles like what's done here. So let's produce in this case, 10 different articles and then only 3 convert. Like, wouldn't you want to have a higher hit rate and say, if I'm going to invest in 10 new articles, wouldn't I want to know that 8 or 9 or 10 of them actually have conversion potential instead of just producing those 10 and hoping that one actually drives conversion? Like, that's what doesn't make sense about this whole thinking around content and not measuring things.
No, because there's a reason. It's the reason that you and I have talked about for a long time and maybe not on this show. So it's good to bring it up now. Is this has been proselytized by kind of some big figures in content marketing, like the HubSpots of the world, who have basically taught everyone that this is the way you do content. And this is the purpose of content, is that this is like some top of the funnel thing. And I'll scroll down to like the marketing funnel diagram that we've used again for many years. Is they teach, because their software kind of is like built around doing that to some extent, that you're supposed to use content not to sell. It's like we see that. It's like writers we try to hire or just other content marketers and other in companies or like teams we try to work with sometimes are like, oh, we don't want to like sell and we don't want to be too salesy, right? And so they've been taught, there's like this culture that has been built in the content marketing and SEO space that it's meant to just like, you know, get general awareness and add value. And it's like, it's educational. People always say that it's educational content. And the whole ethos here is, oh, actually, if you sit down and measure it, and that's the reason I can see now, because you're getting me worked up, why you were worked up when you see that is like the only way to realize that that thinking is false and is wasting potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars of marketing budget a year in your organization is to measure it on a piece-by-piece basis. Otherwise, you're just getting the total, and those details are just gone.
Well, there's a few reasons why people don't. One, it is difficult, as we're going to show, to start to measure things on an article-by-article basis. Two, I think marketers and other agencies as well benefit by not measuring this, because if they actually measured things on a conversion-by-conversion basis and showed that all of the effort that they're putting into producing content on their blog isn't driving results, they're probably out of a job. And if they can just say, look, generally this channel is working, and disregard the last 100 pieces that I produced that didn't drive conversions, conversions are still going up. Like, yeah. It makes them look good.
Great point.
And so like, yeah, we lean into the data. And to be honest, sometimes this does come back to bite us. Like, because we're measuring our content versus the site overall, sometimes our numbers aren't as good as they should be, and it hurts, and we lose clients because of it sometimes. But I think leaning into this data and being able to prove that certain pieces of content that you've produced are driving ROI, one, helps dictate your content strategy going forward, because you should be able to figure out what topics and keywords you should produce more of. Two, it can help when you're thinking about updating content, because again, like, people have, like, we have a video on updating content, so you guys should watch that. But in that video, we go into detail about how all the updating work we did was very strategic, because we looked at what pieces of content have converted in the past and then made concerted efforts to update those pieces, knowing that they would drive ROI if we can get those rankings up almost immediately, versus the opposite, which is just updating anything on your blog. Like, why would you do that? There's very little point to doing that. And then the last thing is, you can also focus link building efforts. So for example, if you know one piece is really high converting and it's ranking in position 10 or position 3, and you can build links to that piece to get it up to position 1 and get more traffic to your article, you also know you're probably going to drive more conversions from it. So not having this level of insight is probably hindering you from driving more results from content.
That's actually a great point that I had overlooked. It is not in the interest. There's that famous Upton Sinclair, I hope I don't misattribute it, quote from that famous book that says, it's hard to convince a man to believe something if his livelihood or job depends on him believing the opposite, right? And so it's in the interest of marketers and content marketers to not measure this if the majority of the pieces they're producing don't convert. Literally, their livelihood is based on that. Moving forward, and by the way, one thing that we're not going to get into beyond me kind of saying this is that you can read these articles and a bunch of articles we've written all over the site and watch our other videos. We're talking about quantitatively realizing that a few articles or content pieces are producing the majority of results. What that unlocks is the qualitative understanding of why and what is common between them. That's what's built Painpoint SEO. What we realize is there is a commonality, that those few pieces that are bringing the conversions every single time were ranking for keywords that we have over the years referred to as our bottom of the funnel. But basically, it's keywords that have buying intent, that you can tell that when someone Googles it, they want to buy that product. That qualitative understanding then transforms your strategy, because obviously the next thing anyone would do is say, oh my God, like, let's do this. And then in Painpoint SEO, and you can read it, we then have like bucketed this into three other types of subcategories of category keywords, comparison keywords, jobs to be done keywords. We can record a bunch of videos in addition about those kind of things later, right? And then you can look at different articles we have that show.
I want you to pull up one more article, because I really think it'll drive this point home, just in terms of conversion rates. So
that's exactly what I was saying. This is the article I was about to say, like, we can look it up, but I forgot what the title or the URL was, so I was just going to avoid it, but you actually just sent it to me. Yeah. Go ahead. We're probably going to say the same thing.
Well, I just think it's important because, again, you can see that different frameworks and different types of content have different conversion rates. And so
let's explain the backstory. Sure. This article was based on a study that me and Meg Riley on our team did a while back,
where we analyzed 95 articles across, I don't know, like a dozen plus clients that in total produced over 4,000 like product related conversions, meaning like free trials, demos, whatever, and over 100,000 sessions. So it's like a decent amount of data. And we looked at the conversion rate patterns of different articles based on what types of keyword they were ranking for. We don't have time to go into in this video what main category keywords are versus side category versus layer of specificity, comparison alternative jobs be done. But the point is, like, we were able to go in and be like, what are the relative conversion rates of these? And for people listening, I'm showing a bar graph of those conversion rates of those kind of subcategories, and they're ranging between like 2, 5, and over 7%. But then there's tons of deeper analysis inside this article where we look at patterns like within that. Like we're looking, I'm showing a graph now of industry specific category keywords, and there's a couple that are, or one that's like converted at 15%. And there's all this really interesting patterns that you can suss out of this stuff of being like, why is this working?
Yeah. And I would say the whole point of measuring on a conversion or on an article by article basis is so you can get this kind of data to dictate your strategy. The reason why we have a completely different strategy than almost every other agency, and the reason why we came up with Pain Point SEO and bottom of the funnel first, is because of this data. We looked at all the data across our clients and we asked the question, why are certain pieces converting higher than others? And that's what led to this information. It's what dictates our strategy. It's what allows us to go into a new account or any new business that we haven't worked with and know what types of pieces we should produce from the very beginning. And without this data, you don't have that. And you just assume all of the pieces are collectively driving revenue when that's just not true. And so that is the value of doing this level of analysis. And like just these conversion rate numbers, if anyone's ever actually measured this, these are extremely high. I know like a 4% conversion rate maybe doesn't sound high to a lot of people, because like a lot of people throw out the average, like, oh, a site converts at 3%. But it's not as simple as that. Like when we analyze most blogs and we look at their conversion rate blog wide, we're seeing conversion rates typically of like 0.25% all the way to sign up.
And this is not, or less. Yeah,
or less. And this is not email sign up. This is signed up for a free trial, reached out for a demo. A 4% conversion rate from someone reading the blog to signing up is extremely high. 15%. This is like higher than most landing pages convert. So that's why this information's important.
Right. Yeah, you don't get that on accident. You get that on purpose. So measuring, we've gotten, thank you to that person for getting us both worked up. So the way, how do you actually measure this, which is what we want to talk on this back half of this conversation, and what we have Amethyst so patiently sitting here smiling and listening to us yell about conversions.
Sorry, she probably hears this rant about this stuff every single day.
but it's more fun on this than on Slack. So this screenshot in Pain Point SEO, let's talk about the mechanics of doing this and this challenge that you started this conversation off with, Benji, of like people noticing that in GA4 it's harder, and so they're even more inclined, or you're seeming to notice that online discussions are getting people to be more inclined to just kind of throw their hands up and be like, whatever, like GA4 makes this even harder. So we're going to start to get a little bit technical, but you don't have to understand every detail of it. We have other articles and videos that we will link to in show notes and all for you to dive in. The point is to try to follow the overall arc of this story. Okay. And number one, this report was in Universal Analytics, which for everyone who's not paying for GA 360 was sunsetted last summer. And this report is a last click report. Why? Because it's the landing pages report, meaning everything is done on a same session basis. Meaning this first row, if you take it as an example, or any of the rows, this URL was the landing page of sessions in which 40 people converted. Why is that insufficient? Because what it's not counting is, what about that URL being a landing page for someone who doesn't convert in that session? So they're not part of this 41, but converts 2 weeks later, who comes back to the site 15 times and converts 2 months later. This landing page was what introduced them to this brand. It should get credit. That is referred to as first touch attribution, because it was the first touch. And this same session stuff in UA was not good enough. So back in the day, years ago, we devised we found, actually, there was some consultant that I've forgotten the name of that like helped me figure this out, or someone in our course. Ooh, I feel
it, really it was a combination of someone in the course letting us know about this model comparison tool, and then us finding a consultant to actually help set it up.
Yeah, there is a, if that person is still listening, I mean, this was like years ago, but
I think you gave a shout out in one of the
old articles. I gave a shout out in an article. I come from academic science, and so it's very important to me not only to attribute leads to blog posts, but attribute ideas to people. So it drives me crazy when people take ideas and pretend it's their own. Anyway, we found a report built inside of UA, the old Universal Analytics. Here, I'm showing the screenshot of UA, that left-hand sidebar, deep inside conversions, the conversions like drop down. The last possible report was Model Comparison Tool, which does exactly what you're thinking, which is it lets you compare conversions or any metric based on different attribution models. So the most common are like last versus first click. So we use this to solve that exact problem. So we'd say on a given URL now, for this particular Grow and Convert post, let's do this number two content strategy, 37 conversions of whatever metric we're talking about. I think in this case, it was like email list signups. Yeah. Versus in the first click, there's 38, right? So one extra person came back in a later session and signed up. That's useful to know. Now, in our case, email signups, it's a little bit different, but we can see, and we do see in our clients, if you're talking about like demo requests for your enterprise SaaS, B2B SaaS thing, each demo is very valuable.
First click or first interaction conversions are typically higher when it comes to content because of how people discover this. So with paid, you can imagine someone's bidding on a keyword, they click into your landing page, and they usually convert in that same session. Whereas when you're ranking for something in SEO, someone's searching for some solution to a problem that they have, they click into your article, they may read it, then they're like, who is this company? I want to learn more about them. Oh, let's research another topic. They might come back to your site and convert at a later point in time.
Yeah, they have to discuss with their coworkers. They're like, oh, I got to discuss with my team. If you're selling like IT security software, that's not a flippant decision. And so if you're ranking for like, you know, pros and cons of blah, 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 technical IT security term, people Google that when they're in the market for something like that, they'll come back later. So we've seen things where it's like last click conversions, 2, first click conversions, 7. There's a big difference, right? That's like multiple fold. So this was all fine and dandy. And then Google threw a big monkey wrench at everyone and said, we are sunsetting Universal Analytics. We're doing GA4. At first we were like, okay, that's fine. We have to like learn this new thing. Then we got into GA4. And this is where I'll turn it over to Amethyst here in a second. And we had this terrible realization. So in GA4, and you can start sharing your screen, Amethyst, and maybe I'll start and then at some point pass the mic over. There is something called Model Comparison Tool. So we were like, okay, things are fine.
We're good.
And then we started to try to use it and realize things are very much not fine. And basically, like many things in GA4 that a bunch of people online for the past year or whatever since last summer have been complaining about, GA4 obfuscates the data. It like averages, and it was just horrible. You can explain the shortcomings of this model comparison tool in GA4.
Yeah, so there are actually a lot of shortcomings to this model comparison tool. First, they took away first click. Like, that's not good. The landing pages themselves are very hidden in this. For us, you know, we only develop part of the blog posts for a given client. And so we only want to track those blog posts. And previously we were using a regex filter to look at each one of those. And in this version of the model comparison tool, that doesn't really work the same way anymore. So there are just like a lot of problems here. So we ended up coming across this solution of taking the raw data from GA4 and putting it into BigQuery, which is a data warehouse also from Google. And with that raw data, we add it to a SQL database that we can then create scripts for to pull the necessary data that we want and put it into a Looker Studio report that does basically exactly what the Universal Analytics version of the report did. We can have first click, last click, add in regex. So we're only filtering by specific blog posts or specific pages, looking at different conversion events and different date ranges. So we can see the very granularly the landing pages, first click, last click, source medium, all of those kinds of things that we can no longer see in GA4. And in this report, it's not being sampled. It's not using any kind of,
it's giving you the raw data.
It's giving you the raw data. Exactly. Yeah,
the sampling thing is a huge issue because people, like, I remember when GA4 rolled out and people were like, even we did this. I think we were comparing the number of conversions we were getting in GA4 and UA, and they were wildly different. And we couldn't figure out why. And it's because a lot of the models that GA4 is using for conversions are sampling models. So they're basically saying it's using some AI or machine learning to then predict about how many conversions you're getting instead of giving you the actual number that we historically
got. Correct. And then if your account isn't getting enough volume of conversions, Google will also threshold your account in GA4 to protect user information. So it makes it harder to figure out exactly what user did what thing on your website.
Let me pause because it took me a bit to understand this. So I want to make sure everyone is understanding what Amethyst is referring to when she says thresholding is. So let me back up a little bit for everyone. If you have the same question we did, which is why, like Google, why? Our understanding, I don't know if this is marketing hearsay. I think at this point it's actually like well established.
I don't know if it's well established, but it is definitely something that we've heard over and over, and it makes the most logical sense as to why they did this.
This is Google's reaction to a lot of, I'm just going to go ahead and blame the European people on our team. And
for sure.
GDPR. Of which there are many on our team. Apologies. We love you, but it's European GDPR privacy rules. And so Google, in order to comply, was like, screw it. We need to toss out all of our GA and just start again. So the GA4 is like obfuscating this data on purpose. And when Amethyst says thresholding, what she means is if you are creating a report that has a resulting like number of users that have done the thing you're measuring, like in our case, like measuring a free trial start from a blog post, and the report would normally give you a number of like one, GA4 creates a threshold and says that's under the threshold. We're just not going to show it to you. That's right, Amethyst?
That's correct. And then if there are, let's say there's more than one, it might just say like, oh, there was only one and you can't really see.
Yeah. And the reason is because they're saying if we were to show you these like we used to in UA, it could allow some webmaster on our side to like suss out and figure out exactly which person it was. And you can imagine how you could do that, right? Like you have some small site and like someone bought something and like you have their credit card info and you can figure out like, you know, oh, that one user, if the analytics lets you see that, you could be like, they came in from this place, their geolocation was this city. And so they're just trying to like not do that. But if you're not trying to do this in some nefarious, creepy purposes, and like us, you're just like, are these blog posts converting? What we can tell you story-wise is for so many clients at the beginning of the engagement, those first few conversions tell us a lot. Like you're at month 3, for example, you've published a few posts and it's some like enterprise sassy thing where like a couple demos is a big deal because a single deal is worth $300,000 a year, whatever, ACV, like situations like that. And you're just like, is anything converting? And you get this one article onto page 1. Seeing that it has one conversion is a big deal. And in those cases, you can figure out who it is, and it's not for nefarious purposes. You're like, oh, this was this huge company, and it was a great lead. And then everyone's like, content is working, versus not seeing that one is like a very different thing where you're like, well, grow and convert content is not producing anything. It's a big deal. And those early signs often do trend towards later stages where you're like, now that piece is producing 10 a month because it's ranking number 1 for this keyword, and it produced 1 when it was on page 2 or something. Those early signs are important, and we couldn't get that. So that was one thing I wanted to talk about is thresholding. The other thing I wanted to slow down to of what Amethyst said, if we go back, Amethyst, to the GA4 model comparison tool that you were showing, the first thing she said is the biggest thing is they took away first click. That's huge.
As we mentioned, the whole point of why we did model comparison tool and universal analytics was because last click doesn't tell the whole story. Content by definition is something people are reading when they're Googling stuff, right? SEO-based content. And then often they need to come back later. Just a 30-minute gap of being idle and leaving your computer or doing something else in Slack or whatever and coming back, in GA's terminology, that's a new session. You wouldn't even see that it came from that same landing page, possibly, right? Much less closing your browser and coming back 3 weeks later after you've like discussed with your team or whatever. And you're like, okay, I want to request a demo. And so first click is important. Instead, for the people watching the screen share, you see data-driven. Data-driven is GA4 being like, this is our own model algorithm, just like assigning weighted averages of different touch points, like different amounts of a conversion, different fractions or percentage of a conversion, and just kind of like trust us, you know, that this, and that's not useful. Like who cares about like data driven. And so what we had to do, to recap what Amethyst said, is, and by the way, she then humbly said what we figured out. It wasn't we, it was actually Amethyst. You like found this in some article or something, that there was this thing where you can export the raw GA4 data from any account into a SQL database. Google BigQuery is Google's database product. It is not free. Or it's like, anytime you do anything more than like one small thing, it's not free. And so we were like, let's do it. We hired a consultant / Amethyst did some coding, and we now import the client data into that database. And then, I don't know why that was funny. That wasn't supposed to be a joke. Amethyst, you do some coding. And a little bit. And then
it was funny because I was going to have her go through the code and explain what everything means.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you pull up the code and explain it line by line? And then we need the code to query the database, AKA pull the information we want from the raw data ourselves. So it's almost like we have created this system of kind of doing our own GA4. Like GA4 is keeping that raw data. They're not erasing the data. They're just not allowing you, with their built-in reports and interface, to slice and dice the data in the way that you want. But you can do that yourself if you export the raw data. And so that's essentially what we are doing for our clients via BigQuery database. And then we're using Looker Studio, what was previously called Google Data Studio, Google's visualization tool, to visualize these things. And those are the bar graphs and all things that we saw. You can go back to that tab, maybe, Amethyst. So this is not easy. So going back, Benji, to what you said at the beginning, you're saying like, you get the feeling that marketers are like, well, this is hard, so we're just not going to measure it. Yeah, this is hard.
Or maybe they don't know it exists. So I mean, one thing like of this video is just showing people that there is a solution to this problem, that it's not, you don't have to use out-of-the-box GA. And the out-of-the-box GA doesn't give you the right data, but there is a solution to the problem. And two, I think to all the people that argue that this data isn't helpful, I hope that the first 25-minute rant of this video proved that that's not true. And I think having this data lets us make informed decisions. It helps the client feel confident that we're all moving in the right direction, that what we're doing is working. So I do think it's very valuable for people to look into this connection of BigQuery and then setting up your own reports. And we built this dashboard based on what we need and what's important to us to present to clients. But there's tons of other data that you can get that might be important to your own business. And you can set up your own dashboard with different information than what we have here. But basically, our own dashboard has the channels that the conversions are coming from, the specific articles, then the specific articles combined with the channel. So you could see, did this one article that we produced drive conversions from SEO, or was it sent out in a newsletter? Where are those conversions coming from to help you make informed decisions about where to promote your content or what's working? To recap, I just think having this data is useful because it can help you figure out what's working and what's not working. It can help you make decisions on what to do going forward. And it can help you have the confidence that what you're doing is actually driving real results for the business, versus just saying content is working, look at how many leads it's driven overall, and then realizing that there's one post on your site that has driven all the leads and that nothing else you're doing is actually working.
Just like my one bicep curl is actually driving all of my leads. One last thing I want to leave the audience with, since this video series and podcast is about doubling the agency, like, I'd be curious for those that have listened all the way through the end to like answer in the comments a few questions. Number one, how compelling do you think this is? Like, if you are thinking about working for an agency, like the fact that we do this, I'm curious whether you're like, I don't know, like this seems kind of nerdy or whatever. If you're like, oh my God, this is compelling. Number two, did you have any idea that Grow and Convert had that capability? Because I'm curious, and where my mind is going in terms of the whole like double our agency goal is, are we advertising that we've done this, that we do this, are enough? Are we like shouting about enough? We're doing this video. Should we have something like this on the homepage? You know, of being like, do you have this kind of clarity of your data? Like our clients do, because we do this for them. You know,
adding this video to the homepage actually now. I already put it on there.
Yeah. Besides Benji yelling at people on LinkedIn, does anyone know that we have this capability? So if anyone's watching to the end, I'd be curious to hear your comments of just sort of like how compelling you think it is, whether you had any idea, like whether you think this should be something that we promote more. I think that we've created this little culture in this video series of people giving their two cents on what we should do. And it's not to say that we necessarily do everything that people say, definitely not, because there's
we've gotten good ideas from it, and part of the series has been informed by people giving feedback on certain elements of our process that we're sharing that they like or they want us to dive deeper into. And so yeah, hopefully the analytics stuff is interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, Amethyst.
Yeah, no problem.
If you like this video, don't forget to subscribe. You can also get the audio-only versions of these shows wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us at growandconvert.com/newsletter for any articles and updates for when these videos come out.